Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
What's going on, everyone? Thanks a lot for tuning in to another fine, fantabulous episode of Dr. Homebrew. It is the Mexican lager, basically 2 hours, because for the next two shows, we're going to be talking about Mexican lagers for the most part. Today is the day that everybody's been waiting for, the final Dr. Hombre showdown. If you're not following along with us at home for some reason, I don't know why you wouldn't be, we have brewed, the boys at Dr. Hombre have brewed a Mexican lager. And this was a couple months ago, I think. And so it's like primed, it's ready to go. It has been, let me tell you, it has been hell. For me not to sit and drink this, I had to take it off tap, and I'm not like a big drinker by any means anymore, but I was ripping through it pretty good. It's very, very easy to drink.
That's good.
Yeah, I like, and it's like, oh man, okay, here we go. And then I brewed a brown ale and I'm drinking that instead, and so it's nice to be able to go back to the Mexican lager and be like, okay, this is what I need. This is what I would like. This is what I would enjoy. And it's fun to like drink it because this beer, it's changed since I got it in the keg, and we'll talk about it a bit later. But in front of me, I have four beers. I know technically we have three, but Brian Cooper went above and beyond. He got extra credit and he dry hopped them. And we're going to do a blind tasting. Char, were you able to set that up?
No.
Okay. That's fine. Don't worry about it. It was a last minute thingarino. So it's not a big deal, but Cooper and I, they're all labeled. They're in front of us. I don't know whose is whose. I guess, Coop, let's just go through them and drink them, or what should we do?
Is that how you want to do it? My volunteer is absent, so I have to pour these and kind of shuffle them myself here.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
fine. I can do this.
You can and I can talk about our fine sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. You guys go to fivestarchemicals.com right now and learn about everything you can do to make great homebrew at home, which is a lot of it. 60% of it probably is cleaning and sanitizing. Maybe not 60, but definitely 50. Cleaning and sanitizing, that's the way to do it. If you want to make high quality beer, if you want to be entering competitions, if you want to get great feedback, you don't want to give judges beer that's been contaminated by a dirty spigot on your fermenter or your bottling bucket, or you didn't clean your wand out, or if you use a bottling wand, you haven't taken off the little nozzle at the bottom and taking the spring out and cleaned all that out. If you haven't done that, you're sort of wasting your time and effort bottling beer for competition. But if you want to learn how to do it, you clean and sanitize with Five Star Chemicals, Darsan, PBW, all the other stuff that they have. They have PBW tablets now. They have liquid PBW, all that kind of great stuff. So go over there, check it out, fivestarchemicals.com. And then while you're over there, join their homebrew club program. You get free stuff. You get monthly, informational emails and stuff like that. And they don't spam you or whatever. So check that out too. Or you can just, you can just go directly to their website, which is fivestarchemicals.com/homebrew-club-program. And they're the amazing, wonderful people who bring you this show each and every month. Yeah, Mills is in the chat. Yeah, bro, but you have to clean that, man. Come on.
The first gusher I had to deal with on this show ever is mine.
Oh man, that sucks.
Oh man, that's good podcasting though.
Sure, yeah, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, lads, what's going on? You guys excited for this as I am, or what?
Let me tell you how excited I am for this. I want you to taste my dry hopped Mexican lager and tell me, is it the best dry hopped Mexican lager you've ever tasted? Because
I don't know. I've had too many dry hopped Mexican lagers.
I know. Maybe it's just something you shouldn't do.
Yeah, I guess. All right. Well, I'm gonna start with okay. A here. It's a nice color. It's pretty light. Nice little carbonation going on. God, what if I pick my beers last? That would be awesome. Okay. I wonder if it's mine. Okay. B is very light. My B is very light. Look at these two beers.
Mm.
A couple SRM different, but this one is, it almost looks like cider. So one of you guys did a great job. Kind of smells like cider.
Mm.
That's very dry. Kind of tart, almost, maybe. Not tart. Tangy. Chris, probably mineral is what I would guess, like a pH thing, but I don't know. C, I bet I picked out the dry hopped Mexican lager because it smells like Flintstones vitamins.
All right.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely... That is a cold IPA.
Is it a little too much? did we go a little too crazy there? Okay.
I'm looking forward to this cold IPA I'm hearing about.
And D is... God, you know, D is interesting. It's there's actually a lot of butterscotch in there, but it's not awful. I think with like the recipe, with everything else that's in that beer, it's not awful. I wouldn't call it good. It's flawed, but like the flavors are good. The carbonation's great. This is the best carbonation of them all. Kind of wild. All right.
Okay. Well, I have successfully randomized my beers by just shuffling them in front of myself.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there's one minor problem. I did pour them all for myself and I tried not to note any appearance differences, but there may be some slight bias in here.
You know what? We are not scientists. Don't worry about it, brother. Yeah. You're good.
Okay. So I'm going to go.
And you were the one who wanted to do this.
I did.
And then now, and then I'm the only one who had an assistant.
Well, yeah. My kids at swimming lesson. What are you going to do?
Oh, okay. Yeah. What are you going to do?
It's been a long, long day and it just wasn't going to happen tonight.
Yeah. Understandable. All right.
Okay. Yeah. This first one smells really clean, really nice. Little corn. It's fairly clear. Oh, it's got a nice little edge to it. It's got a nice little, it's dryness and it's refreshing. It goes off the tongue. Nice and cleanly lagered. A little hop that comes up to meet the malt, a little floral and spicy. I like that one. It's a contender. Okay. The second beer in my lineup. Wow, this one is light. It's lighter aroma than I think the first one that I'm tasting here. But it's still got a clean little graininess, light overall, faint corn, very faint floral hop. Okay, that's light and refreshing. It's got a little more sweetness in the mid palate, I think. It's got a little smoother feeling to it than the first one, which had more of an edge from kind of a bitterness, like more of a chalky kind of impression. Hmm. And yeah, this one's really smooth. Like you could drink a lot of that.
You seem surprised.
I don't know. Okay, this one, I'm getting a faint touch of diacetyl in it. It's a little bit hazy. A little bit of a bitter edge. This one's hoppier than I think a Mexican lager should go to. I mean, the hops can come up. It should be fairly even between hops and malt. Sometimes it can lean towards the malt. Very occasionally, it might lean a little bit toward the hop, but this one's got quite a bit of hop in it. And I don't dislike it. I don't have the dry hopped one in my mix either. So this is just the first three, not the dry hopped, unless somehow somebody slipped me one. But
yeah, I'm drinking that one too, because it's the only one that I've the flavors of, and I like the bitterness. I think that's what makes it still consumable, I guess, with that butterscotch, you know, platform in there. The malt tastes good and the hops are it's very bitter, not very bitter, but very firm bitterness. Yeah. Almost so, like a German Pils bitter,
edgy.
Maybe a little bit more. Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah. You know, and as I retaste this first one, it was the first beer I drank. It comes across even a little smoother than when I first sipped it, because sometimes that get a more bite in the first beer you judge out of a series, but it's still got that little chalky, watery impression, but it's not watery. It's very flavorful. So let's see. I think for me, it's between the first two that I'm tasting here. I think the second one in the series there is maybe even a little bit too smooth. It's, you know, it should, in the flavor, it should be, you know, have a medium low to medium bitterness with a crisp, dry, well attenuated finish. I'd say the number one is probably a little better attenuated. And the second one has a little more sweetness to it. So it's playing more like maybe a light, you know, I don't know, Hellas with a little touch of corn in or something, you know, it's just like, or like, yeah, I don't know. But I think I like the first sample better. And then the second one, then the third one here. So I'll just go with that.
Okay. The problem is I have to go, I have to go pop out to the garage or to the kitchen with the R.
Talk amongst yourself. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll talk among ourselves. So Coop, did you have any of these that you thought were like really cloudy or not as clear as the others?
Yes. One of them is cloudier than the others. Yeah. This is the third one in the mix.
So one of these things is not like the others, they would say on Sesame Street.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when I was five, it was like 1970 to 71. That was my favorite thing on Sesame Street. It probably still is.
Okay. Yeah.
So for me, A was my beer. Okay. B was Brian Cooper's. C was Brian's dry hop, and D was Brian Schar's. And I went out to look at the bottle, my wife left them out on the counter, and yeah, you were right, Char. There's some like cakey foam that's just dripped out. I was like, oh man.
Okay.
I have a story for you boys later.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Give
so
it to me, Cooper.
Yeah. I lined mine up. The one with the number, three on the glass was JP beer. And that is the one that I rated the highest.
Yes.
Number one was Cooper beer. And number two, who does number two work for? That's sure. Brian Schar.
I'm number two.
So yeah, as far as like what I liked better, I don't know. I think my beer, but it's interesting because drinking out of, you know, the 10-ounce festival glass that I always drink out of at least. And then out of this Nonic, like 16-ounce or 20-ounce or whatever, they taste different.
Yeah, I believe you. We've talked about this on the show before.
That's true. Yeah, out of this Nonic glass, I get more corn. And out of this, it was tasting kind of thin. Out of the small glass, it was thinner.
Same beer?
Same exact beer. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Weird, right? Like, that is so... And I used to just poo-poo the glass design means a thing, but it does. It really, really matters, especially, I think, with lighter flavors like this. But I don't know.
It really does. I'm not sure if anyone, that's an area of research that I think would be really hard to do, but would really be useful. So I'm not sure if anybody really knows why. Like there's mommelies about, you want to have this shape for this purpose. I'm not sure anyone knows that.
You know what? There is, I think Riedel, the German glassmaker, I think does a lot of research on it. And I want to talk to a couple people that I know and see if we can talk to someone about that. You know, obviously someone in the States maybe, but
because that'd be
super
great.
Fascinating. Yeah. I mean, especially for like a homebrew thing too. Like it would be, I don't know, maybe that changes the face of judging, you know, or instead of it's these solo cups, you know, because you can't really, it's the same shape as like a judging cup. But
what we really should do is to design and market a Dr. Homebrew.
Oh,
designed glass. Like,
are you kidding
our
me?
Perfect taste glass. The super Nonic.
The eight people who listen to the show will be.
Right.
And that's the other thing, right? No, we have 10. I'm kidding. I feel like every glass shape has been done already. Like, what are you going to do that's different than like, because I can go in my cabinet right now and pull out 10 glasses that are literally different shapes. But just for like festivals and stuff like that. I feel like everything's been done, you know?
We ask AI.
Oh, yeah. ChatGPT, which of my glasses would work?
We do a Midjourney of a glass.
Yeah, why not, man? Speaking of Midjourneys, let's take a break real fast. We're going to come back and we'll figure out what we're doing next. So hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back. What's up, homebrewers? Hey, let me ask you a question. You spend a lot of time making your beer taste the way you want it to, right? Some of you even send beers in to Dr. Homebrew for feedback. Well, the next logical step in your creativity is to craft some labels for those beers. And there's nobody better at creative labels than GrogTag. Their easy-to-use designs let you turn out some pretty amazing stuff like labels, bottle caps, coasters, even six-pack carriers with minimal effort on your part. They have a range of label sizes that fit any vessel you can think of. Bottles, cans, growlers, kegs. GrogTag has you covered.
Head over to grogtag.com today and check out their line of amazing, fully customizable templates and get your beer looking its best. Grog tags are water resistant, reusable, and will have your naked bottles looking great in no time. That's grogtag.com, and be sure to use code BNARMY at checkout to save 10% on your order.
All right. Thanks for sticking around, everybody. We are back. Cooper and I ran through. We picked our favorite beer, which was mine. I think we can both agree. Brian Shaw, what was your favorite? Now that you know who's, whatever, you know.
You know, it's difficult to tell. It's not mine, but I would say that part's not hard. My favorite's not mine. Mine's my least favorite. JP, I like yours. I think it's good. I love the assertive hopping in this. I don't think it's excessive. It's not a cold IPA, but I think it's good. There's something at the flavor at the very beginning that I don't like.
Fuck you too.
and I'm not sure what it, but it's probably my perception. It could be what I think this is, it's a really good beer.
Let me guess what it is. I mean, is it like a sharpness?
No, it's like a malt. Or like maybe like a malt type, a malt related character, like maybe an adjunct. There's just something on the malty side.
We did the same.
All use same malts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so. I know we all use the same malts. So maybe it was something that was in the growler. You know, that can happen. But I mean, it's not bad. I like it a lot.
Okay.
Cooper's, I think, is more, you know, international pale lager. Yours has more character. And in some ways, I'm not sure that character is what you want from an international pale lager / Mexican lager. But I think you need to have something there that gives it a Mexican lager character. Otherwise, it's just international pale lager. And there's 1,000 of those out there. So I would, JP, I'd say I probably you probably edge out Cooper just a little bit.
Yes, I edged Cooper, you guys. You heard that? And the edging king, man. That's hella cool. That's so weird. I mean, the difference is between these beers, which is why we did it. And I really want to talk to you, Shar, about your brew day, because you did it on stove and you still made in what I think is still a very drinkable beer. If we could have got rid of that butterscotch,
yeah,
then the only fault would be like, maybe it's a little too bitter, but it tastes great. The carbonation is rock solid. But just in case anybody forgot, here's the recipe again. This is for 5 gallons. It's 4 pounds, 14 ounces of Great Western 2-Row. I think is what we used Viking.
Viking. Yes, the Viking pale malt.
One pound, 10 ounces.
Extra light, I think.
Extra light, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
1 pound, 10 ounces of flaked corn. 1 pound, 10 ounces of 2-Row, Pilsner 2-Row, German. 3 ounces of Vienna malt, and then it's Magnum at 60, which is 0.37 ounces, Spalt at 5, which is 0.37 ounces, and then Tettnang at 5 as well at 0.37 ounces.
Yeah.
So, and I used for yeast, I used the Cellar Craft, I think is the name, the dry yeast. And I think it tastes great. And I'm all aboard with dry yeast now, man. Like I used
nice.
the cellar cellar craft or whatever it is for the brown ale I made. I think it was rocking. I have not had without doing starters. I just sprinkle it on the top and then just let it go. I don't touch it. And I shake it whenever, like the next day. But aside from making starters, when I used to make starters, I've never had fermentation start this quickly, like ever. And I do 2 packs for 5 gallons.
It's one of the virtues of dry yeast, right? Because you're making a lager or you're making a high gravity ale, something you want to have a pitch a lot of yeast for. It can get expensive to do that for liquid yeast, or you end up doing the thing where you make a 5 gallon starter, but where you make like a 5% beer and then you pitch your wort on top of that.
I'm not trying to do that, dude.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we've all done it. And you know, if you are good with sanitation, it's not going to hurt you, but it does introduce that delay into your brewing sometimes, because like you need to brew a beer before you can brew. It's like that. You have to smoke two joints before you smoke two joints.
That's right.
And then you smoke two more.
Yeah.
Like, how do you ever start? Because you always have to smoke two before you can smoke two. I don't know how you get started with that.
Maybe that's the conundrum.
It is.
I think it's just heroin logic. That's all.
It really is. Yeah. I think that the dry yeast is a great choice for yeast or for lagers or for high gravity ales. Probably a great choice for other things too.
Yeah, I just edited the Bruce Strong episode where Jamil spoke with a guy from Lalmon about a lot of dry yeast stuff and whatever. It was cool. And they were talking a lot about how far dry yeast has come. And, you know, Lalmon's really been like sort of pushing that technology. And you know, now you can make it do different things. Like, and it was $4 for a packet.
Yep. And what was the style that you used?
Oh, fart, dude. I don't remember.
Was it just a German lager or?
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, probably. Yeah, for the brown, I just used like the American or whatever, but I think it was a lager. Yeah, I think it was like a German lager.
Yours was, what was it? What yeast brand do you remember? It was the.
Well, I think it was like Cellar Tracker or Cellar Maker. No.
Cellar Science.
There you go.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Char used the Weihenstephaner strain, right?
No, I used the White Labs Mexican Lager yeast. I think it was the 970. Yeah, the 940.
Oh.
WLP 940.
Okay.
And I only brewed like 2 gallons, so I just pitched it straight into the fermenter, which for me was just a corny keg.
Okay, cool. It had an orange thing on it. I'm sure you can't see that. It was like an orange packet for JP, right? German.
I think so. I think that's what it was. Yeah.
And for mine wasn't a lager at all. I used the Lutra yeast, the Omega Kvike.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's not a lager. It was fermented at 78 degrees, and it fermented in like a day and a half, if that.
There's fruit.
Now that you say Kvike, Now that you say Kvike, I can't untaste it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm definitely get a little.
Oh, we lost.
You're muted or something now.
Brian. Lost the sound.
I don't know what happened. Mad. Maybe you kicked something. Maybe you kicked a power cable with your big old feet, Brian. Yeah. And you know what? It's, I get like a cherry, like as it's like warming up, it's flat basically. Sort of like a cherry skin or like a grape, like a red grape skin.
There's a little sweetness in there, but it did finish higher. It finished at about 10:14, and it only started, you know, at 10:39 because I had some little problems on my brew day. The Pico brew that I used kind of stopped because the sensor got too hot. It needed another clean. I just didn't have time to do the 2.5 hour clean cycle before I ran this. So
yeah, dude.
But it wasn't time for a clean. But I should clean it more often than I do. And so it went, you know, it started at 10:39. I'm like, oh damn, I'm not gonna make 4%, but it came up to just 4%. So it's on the lighter side, finishing at 10:14. It's, you know, and that's perfectly fine. I'm happy that it came to that and, you know, made it to that level of attenuation. I wish it had attenuated just a little bit more, but then I worry that it might have been too light and almost like a light lager. So I'm kind of happy with it the way it landed.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's it doesn't taste like a Mexican lager, that's for sure.
It does have that. I mean, it's very similar to yours. I think that there might just be a water difference. I probably used that lately when I've been brewing. I use a mix of spring water with distilled, and I kind of lighten up the minerals in the spring water. I'd have to go back to my physical paper notes that I did when I made the batch, but
old school, man. Yeah, I had some interesting things during brew day. I'm still trying to dial in the system. I sort of am realizing that, you know, I'm kegging probably 4.5 gallons or so, maybe 4 sometimes. So this is the time, of course, when I tried to, you know, have this mean something, that I decided to fuck around with, volume and whatever. So I try to like really measure my volume, and I think my refractometer is sort of wonky where there's no cover for the lens or whatever. So I had to like take a piece of plastic and like try to smash it down to simulate that, to like get the sample to smash against the whatever. And it kept reading really low. It kept reading low. And I was like, well, what the fuck? So now I have to add some DME. did I get it up?
Yeah.
So I added some DME. Well, and then it was too high. I'm like, well, okay. Jesus Christ, dude. So then I had to add some water and it was a whole thing. So like,
it's a balancing act. Yeah.
It was a balancing. And then I said, you know what? I don't care anymore. Like I've been realizing doing the like brewing with the Brewzilla is I don't care anymore.
It's like, going to make beer.
It's going to make beer. I'm trying not to stress out about it. Like I used to really stress out about how the beer is going to come out. And maybe it was a pride issue, or maybe it's because I don't know. I don't know what it was. Maybe a competitive thing with the other people on like the session or just at work or whatever. And I'm realizing like I don't care. And the Robo Brew is great for that because you can sit there and not care. Give us some notes, Brian. What did you decide from these beers? Let's talk about it.
Okay. Yeah, so I judged Brian's first. I judged his last night. He gave me two bomber bottles, but I didn't want to judge yours yet because it was in one big growlette, and I didn't want to.
Ooh, a growlette. You know, okay.
Like a clean canteen, like a half growler thing.
Don't feminize me. Come on.
Yeah. So I judged Brian's first last night. Sense.
Yeah.
And then here we go. So. It had a nice hiss upon opening. Seemed to be well packaged and carbonated. You saw that little CO2 plume rise up out of it.
Oh, nice.
And in the nose, I got a pleasant, clean, low maltiness with a touch of corn-like. It seems cleanly lagered, but it just has a faint whiff of diacetyl. And it's really not much. It's coming in. And it's very delicate and low overall. So that diacetyl kind of stands out, but it's not a high level. No obvious esters here. It's not very sulfury, no DMS-like or acetaldehyde character. The beer is yellow and lightly hazy. This is actually a little more hazy on my sample.
How dare you?
the one that I just poured, the second bottle. But, you know, maybe it was the last... You know, last one I got shaken up or something. Who knows? Either you can have a little bottle variation.
Shars. Oh, they're not mine.
This is Shars. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then fuck it. Who cares? Yeah. Mine's hazy too. But he had a lot of yeast in the bottom of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was kind of a nice creamy looking head. Good texture. Very fine bubbles mainly.
Yeah, he has the best carbonation out of all.
The
of
head them. Persisted well. You know, it almost looks like a wheat beer appearance. Flavor wise, it is. Has a low grainy aspect with a medium low hop bitterness coming up to meet that. Accents the malt really well. But I wonder if it was maybe just a touch high. At least it was kind of unexpected for me to have that much hop in it.
Can you guys hear me?
Hey!
Yes.
There's the boy.
I got a new laptop, and for as much money as it costs, it's a colossal piece of shit. And this is just what happens.
Okay. Oh, I'm going through your score sheet now. So, yeah, and the flavor, again, continued. Had a little unexpectedly high hop, but it was actually okay. It's not crazy, but it's a little bit high, and it's kind of herbal and floral, a little spice. But yeah, it wasn't getting any serious buttery note in the flavor. I think maybe the hops and the malt, the corn-like part, and all everything else that's in there kind of covered that up a bit. The beer seems quite dry and well attenuated. You know, the bitterness seems just a little bit rough, and it does linger a bit in the aftertaste. But yeah, that again, that diacetyl that was there in the nose has to be very, very faint. So I'm hardly getting it in the flavor or the mouthfeel for that matter. But yeah, the low corn is there, but it's a little bit masked by the, you know, the more flavorful aspects of this beer. 14 out of 20 for flavor. I get a 2 out of 3 for appearance because of the haziness and 8 out of 12 for aroma. Medium light body and the mouthfeel. It's pretty much to style. Medium high carbonation. This can be a fairly carbonated beer, so that's fine. That's probably the best carbonated of the three. Has a hint of a bite, possibly combining that carbonic with a little the bitterness from the flavor, kind of combining with that carbonic bite to make it just a little bit more biting than some. No warmth really, or any creaminess. It's not astringent, so it's pretty okay in the mouthfeel overall. In the overall impression, I would say. It's a clean drinking Mexican lager. It has a light, bitter edge, but it's still quite well lagered and drinkable. I'd like the corn to come through just a little bit more. But it's really well packaged. There's no real oxidation noticed here. It's nicely carbonated, kept that in the bomber bottle. So well done there. I would back off the bittering hops and do a little bit longer diacetyl rest in there. There's something just from early fermentation that stuck around in there. But, you know, the minor defect that's in it is very, very light. So I knocked it down into, you know, very good territory. Generally within style parameters, some minor flaws. So, and there's just the haze. You could clarify it a little better, fix the diacetyl, back off the hops a little bit in there. Or work with the way that you play that with them, put them a little later in the boil. So yeah, 35 for Brian's. What do you have any notes on that?
35.
I'm impressed. Wow.
Did you have any notes on it, JP? Or do you disagree with the score? Maybe I was being a little nice because I don't know it's Brian's beer. But.
I think you were being nice, honestly. I don't think that would be a 35. I would say a 30. I mean, because there's that diacetyl is a big flaw, but you said you didn't get it really.
I got it in the nose, but much less so in the flavor. So it was very, very faint to me.
Okay.
But some people, yeah, get it even more than me. So,
well, I've discussed on the show most of the time, numerous times, many times, that I'm what you call a super taster. So I know about all the tasting things. I'm a good taster. Okay. I can taste. I'm the best taster. Some would say I'm the best taster. Okay. But yeah, I get it pretty a lot. I would give like a 30 or 32. I think we'd still be within seven. I wouldn't go below that because it's interesting. I think if that diacetyl wasn't there, I think the hops would be fucking way off in the left field. It'd be too hoppy, but that sweetness from that butterscotch, like, balances that out a little bit, and it's not as bitter, right? I'm guessing. So it sort of plays with that. But I would love to know how the hell he got this, like, so bitter when we all use the same exact shit. Yeah. I would love to. I gotta know what this freak's fucking brew day was like.
Well, we talked about my brew day last time, and it was exhaustively, and it was. We don't need to probably rehash that. Go back to the last episode and listen for an exhaustive description of my brew day with my janky equipment that I kind of found around the house.
What was it again? It was a spaghetti pot.
It was one spaghetti pot, and I had the you know, that strainer part you can kind of lift up and get the grain out of, and then I also used I sparged, quote unquote. I had this big Le Creuset, like probably like a gallon and a half pot. Like a Dutch oven thing. Mm-hmm. So I sparged by lifting out that spaghetti strainer part, putting it in that Le Creuset part, and then pouring some sparge water onto that to go into the. Hey, you know, the fact that I can make something that Cooper calls a 30 with just bullshit in my house.
Oh, he called it a 35.
Well, yeah, 35 at first.
I came down to a 32 after JP made this comment.
So, well, there you go.
This is so much better than the courtesy 13 that my first beer I ever made in like 1993 would have been.
Yeah.
Nobody ever scored it. If I went back in time, I'd probably slap myself and give myself a courtesy 13. I wouldn't say go get a new hobby. I'd just say brew more. But yeah. that's what happened. And I think that the hoppiness, I mean, it is hoppy. I'm drinking it here, and it's cloudy and it's hoppy. And the hoppiness comes from the fact that I had like a 2 gallon batch size. And in fact, I even had I never measured my volume. I suspect that my volume into the fermenter was less than I had thought it was going to be able to be anyway. So my back of the envelope kind of calculations for hops, I use way too many hops, even though I had I had very few hops in that little bag.
Charger's living life, man. Yeah. Just fuck it. I'm not measuring anything. I don't know, man. I'm just whatever, dude.
Hey, man, you guys wanted to do this show and I had to brew something. So I'm going to make it happen.
Yeah. And you did.
So let's talk about the diacetyl rest. So I brewed this in a Corti keg and I had this. There's an old spunding valve that I got from More Beer that was, you know, it worked fine. And rather than using an airlock, I'm trying to not buy a lot of stuff because I want to start brewing again, but I don't want to buy a lot of stopgap stuff. You know what I mean?
Yes, so I do. Yes. If you're going to spend money, it's going to be shit that you're going to use, not like Band-Aid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And we'll get to that some for the packaging part. So I go out. We live in the East Bay. It gets hot out here. I mean, it's been the end of summer and we've had some days that are like 100. So I go out to check on this beer like 2 weeks after I ferment it. And it's, I don't know, it's nobody's fault. The electric outlet in the garage is a little loose, and I have to kind of stretch the cord a little bit to plug it in. And I go to check it, and it's unplugged.
Oof.
My fridge is probably like 80 plus degrees inside. Oh. So there's my diacetyl rest. Oh. It's been up to like 80. So frankly, the fact this is drinkable, I was expecting a courtesy 13 from you guys. I had not tasted this. I'm thinking this is going to be horrible. But you know what? That was my diacetyl rest, and I still had some diacetyl. So that happened. So I go to package, and something, you know, you guys, I have a degree in aerospace engineering. So I have a mechanic at heart. I am a mechanical engineer before I was ever a lawyer. You think I would know that my auto siphon that's been sitting in my garage for years that I haven't used in 6 or 7 years, you think I'd know the seals would be dry and non-functional. So I got these bombers because I'm trying to minimize stuff I'm doing. I got a few bottle caps. These are the 22 ounce bomber bottles. I filled them each with star sand and partway shook them up, on the counter with some star sand in them so I could shake them up some right before I fill. So that's happening. And I get madder and madder. This is like 7 o'clock. So this is like 7 a.m. like last Thursday. This is like less than a week ago.
Wow.
It was a very busy week. I'm like, I've got to bottle this stuff now, or it's not going to carbonate or anything before I get it to the show. So it's like 7 a.m. and I'm flipping out because the siphon won't work. So I'm like, okay, my plan had been to use the auto siphon, fill up a pitcher, and then use the pitcher to pour that into the individual bottles. I have a funnel that kind of matches. It's not small enough to go in the bottle, but it kind of matches the diameter of the opening. So yeah, this is just horrible. And again, I don't want to buy a bottling bucket because I don't want to waste that money. Right. I'm going to start kegging again.
They're
at some
expensive.
Point.
They're like $15.
I know. Well, I
they are. They're still, expensive as shit.
Well, I know that's 15 for, I don't want to spend, I don't want to go out and spend all this money for stuff I don't know I'm never going to use again. The auto siphon I would use again. I just didn't think about that having the seals that weren't working.
Right.
So I end up in sheer and utter frustration. I take the corny keg. I star sand like the handles, one of the handles. I grab the other handle and I pour the beer through the handle that I've star sand into the pitcher, and then take the pitcher and fill, dump the star sand out of these bottles and fill it up like
hell yeah.
if, for those of you listening on the pod and not watching, JP is, I think he's just kind of beside himself right now hearing this nonsense. And I use those fermentation drops, those like Muntin's fermentation drop things.
God, suddenly it's 1998 all over again for Brian Char.
I've never used these before. I somehow found a bag of these at More Beer Concord, over by like the weird.
They do work. I will say that. Yeah.
I put two in each. Yeah.
They're like cough drops. They're like little cough drops. Yeah.
I put two in each bottle, which is what the instructions said, which is probably why I'm the most carbonated. And I'm surprised after 6 days, it's carbonated like this.
It still has, this has been sitting out, it still has a nice little ring around it. Like it is very well carbonated.
Yeah, mine still has a head, and I have my thing. You can see my USS Cerritos thing for the on my glass. But yeah, it's hilarious. I'm shocked. I thought this would be, I smelled it coming out of that keg, and it smelled good. It didn't smell, I was thinking with all the stuff that it had been sitting in that fridge, God knows how long, with the fridge being off, and it being like 90, 100 degrees here during the day. I'm thinking that there's no way this isn't ruined. And the fact that it's still like a 30 is kind of a testament to things like star sand. I'm not just blowing smoke up our sponsor's butt here. I mean, the stuff like the things like star sand, things like the kind of ingredients we can get, the kind of yeast we can get compared to what we could get in 1993. I mean, 1993, you were lucky to get a package of dry yeast that wasn't all dead.
It was all Nottingham too.
Yeah, like, right. pretty much.
Cool.
So that was my packaging day. So it was entertaining, but it got the job done. And frankly, I'm pleased that it gets me to like, a 30. It's not perfect, but it's not total ass either.
Yeah.
Well, I picked it up on Sunday, and you'd only been doing it since Thursday, so that's like 4 days, and then it went right into my fridge since then. So And here we are, Wednesday. I'm hearing a little echo of myself there.
Oh,
yeah, me too.
But that's why I had my kids, they very kindly Sunday morning put this stuff in a cooler and put it out in the out front of my house. But I left it out on like a bar top here at home to in normal temperature. So it would have like hopefully 2-3 days to try to carbonate. And, you know, I guess these fermentation drops actually work pretty well. Who knows?
Yeah, no, they work. Yeah. They work great. Very good. You want to read mine?
Okay.
You want to do mine?
Let's do that. On to the Growlithe.
The star of the show is what you mean.
All right. This one.
I've always said about myself, I can't do pale beers and I can't do lagers. And like anything darker than a pale ale, I can't. There's no way. I can't do it. But
apparently this beer, you can.
I know I did an amazing job. I'm pretty much the best home brewer that's ever lived.
So
I'm actually going to write into the HA to have them retroactively award me some medals.
So you're home brewer of the year then?
Yeah, basically.
Open the mini growler. Couldn't really see the fill level on that, so whatever. Check the box.
Yeah, it was hard.
In the nose, fresh smelling grainy malt, the light clean corn behind it. Well executed lager fermentation apparent. No obvious esters or DMS, diacetyl, etc. There's a faint spicy floral hop here. Really comes through nicely, but it's clean and light overall. Really pleasant aroma. I gave it a 10 out of 12 there. Appearance, lightish yellow color with good clarity, a fine white head that fades to a collar after a short while, but that's okay for the style. It can fade fairly quickly. Mainly fine bubbles there. 3 out of 3 for appearance. In the flavor, a clean grainy malt with low pleasant notes of corn, a medium low bitterness. Seems very well attenuated. A little of the light white bread and white cracker like quality does come through too.
Okay.
The hops are low, spicy and floral. The balance is mainly to the malt, but the hops balance it out nicely. It's light overall, but flavorful for a smaller beer, especially. I'm not getting any DMS or diacetyl. Again, just a clean lager character, a light grainy corn with a flash of hops in the aftertaste as it kind of dries off the tongue. And that's what you get, just, you know, real refreshing beer. And that kind of carries into the mouthfeel. It's really crisp, has a nice little low carbonic bite, which can be in the style too. There's no astringency, not really creamy or anything like that. I would say medium carbonation level. That's okay. Probably want a little bit more carbonated for the style. Refreshing, very easily drinkable, even when it's quite cold. And it's really cold coming out of this insulated little half growler.
Nice.
But it's not too biting. Just say medium light body, kind of right where it should be. Overall, it's a 4 out of 5 for mouthfeel. Overall, very clean drinking Mexican lager. Nice use of ingredients and great lagering technique. I enjoy the modest complexity of malt and the pleasant light hop that comes in. In such a summery, light, you know, lawnmower beer, you could clarify it just a touch better, perhaps add just a little bit more corn, as this isn't quite coming through as much as I might like it to. But really? It's really nice.
I was a little concerned that it would be too much, and I think over time, over the month or whatever it's been in the keg, the corn has backed off a little bit, which I was a little surprised about as well.
Well, I'm tasting it really cold too. This thing, the growler just keeps it super, super chilled.
No,
so as it warms, I'll taste it again, but okay. I let it out of 40 for this beer. I thought it was excellent. Nice. It is excellent. Well done.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I was concerned that it was too much corn at first, but I loved it. And that's what I think a Mexican lager should, I mean, that should be, but I don't know, if you're brewing with corn, that's what we were talking about doing the recipe. It's like, if you're going to brew with fucking corn, brew with corn.
It's got to be something you can taste. And I think that's, as it warms up, that's what I'm tasting at the beginning, is just a lot of corn, which I actually like.
Me too. I like it. I think it's good.
But it's not a sweet corn. It's like a dry, you know, the dryness with the corn plays it a little differently. So
yeah,
kind of interesting that way.
I think we made a good recipe. Char, what do you want to do? You want to go through, you want to hit Cooper's?
Well, did you do a sheet for JP's or no?
I didn't do a score sheet for our beers for this show.
Okay.
Okay. Why don't you give me a score and then run through Cooper's, because I don't need details on my beer, but let's talk about Cooper's maybe more in depth too, because his is the most kind of interesting with that Louis Vuitton yeast or whatever it was.
Lucha Kvike.
Yeah, I Louis Vuitton is easier to say.
Yeah, it really is.
It's the most expensive yeast there is.
Yeah, that's right.
But is it good? Well, I don't know, but it's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It must be good.
Yeah.
It comes in its own designer handbag.
A lot of people claim to like it.
Tell you what, let's take it before you do that, Char. Sorry, let's take a quick break.
It's a good idea.
Take our final break. We're gonna come back. And then we'll go through my beer and Cooper's beer, and that's it. We're done.
Yeah.
Cool. So hang on, everyone. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to pour you out.
Back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, everyone. Thanks for hanging on. We are going to be chatting about Brian Cooper's beer and my beer a little bit, but mainly Brian Cooper's beer, because I think that's the most interesting, to be honest. But, Char, go ahead and give me my laurels, please.
Of course. Well, prepare to be laureled. You know, I really like this beer. That it's weird. You can tell a beer is good when it warms up, it gets better. And this, I think, gets better as it warms up. I love the corn. When it was colder, I was perceiving that as some kind of off flavor or a part of some kind of off flavor. But it's as it warms up, it's more apparently corn, which is good. It's an ingredient in this style. And it's, you know, Cooper said something that kind of made me think about this. It tastes a little more, the corn character isn't like cornmeal or popcorn or even like corn on the cob. It's more like corn that's a little bit dried, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Right. There's not like you're chewing on some old dry hard corn kernels, but you know, corn gets a little bit dried out and there's a flavor to it, and it's a little bit more concentrated, I think, because some of the moisture is gone.
Like, and it's a roasted little corn kind of an aspect.
Yeah you know, kind of maybe toward that end of the spectrum, exactly,
without being burnt or
exactly.
Super yeah, burnt or too color, without, dark color. That kind,
yeah,
of, kind
of subtract the roast out of that. But I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. There's no off flavors or off aromas. Maybe a little more carbonation would be nice. A Mexican lager, it's funny. I had a Pacifico last week, and Pacifico is one of my favorites. You know, it was one of my favorites, 30 years ago. It's still a real solid beer. It's tasty. There's not a lot to it, like any international pale lager, category 2A beer, but there is something to it that is, and part of it's the corn, and just part of it is there's a little bit more flavor in a Mexican lager than in just a standard international pale. And that's the character that I think is why the reason these beers are so popular in the U.S. It's not just because of the Latino population in the United States. It's because they're tasty beers and people like them, no matter your ethnicity or where you're living, because there's a little bit more to them than like your standard lager offering in a lot of ways. And I think this beer really has a lot of that. A little bit more, again, this has been sitting in my glass for a while, but a little more carbonation would be good, but no off flavors, no off aromas. Yeah, I would agree with Coop and given this, 40-ish, high 30s, nice. High 30s, 40.
High 30s. I liked 40 better.
Yeah, 40. But this is one where, carbonation, the medium high carbonation would really elevate this to a definite 40 plus.
It's and my struggles with that. I've always, that's the other thing I can't really do is carbonate the beer properly. Poured this out of my cooler or out of my kegerator, and it's like the head is already sort of dying. I'm not even though I took like a draft course, like a planning course.
Yeah.
For commercial systems I can set them up, but for mine, I think I'm coming back to that. I don't care anymore.
You gotta try those carbonation drops, man. Apparently, the drops is where it's at.
But what I mean? Like these are the little things that I used to like sort of stress out about. And I used to go, I'm not a good home brewer because I can't put a bow on my packet, right? I can't wrap it up nicely with high carbonation.
Well, you could put a bow on your package if you wanted to.
I do. I mean, it was our anniversary yesterday.
Okay.
But you know what I mean? It's those kind of things where like I realize as I get older, it's like I don't really fucking give a shit. Does the beer taste good? Sure. Is it a little bit undercarbonated? Yeah, but I don't care enough. I don't care enough to put my efforts into changing it or to stress out about it. I'm at the point in my brewing career where I just like the act of brewing and everything else is fucking secondary.
It's the Charlie Capazian thing, right? Relax. Yeah, but
less
don't worry.
Like, whatever.
Less, okay.
Yeah, someone out there, maybe one of our listeners, packaging might be their favorite thing. For 99.999% of home brewers, I'm sure, I bet commercial brewers too, packaging is their least favorite part of the process. Yeah. But it's important. But it's also, what you say, JP, this is my, my cloudy 30-point, janky ass Mexican lager that's drinkable. You know what? It's maybe time in our lives, or we should just be thinking about, we made something that was drinkable and it's not bad. Okay. And we did our best with what we had available to us.
We're not saving lives.
No, no one's going to die or not die because they drank or didn't drink this. Well, and we had fun doing it and we're talking about it. We're having a good time.
Yeah. And for the Coopers out there who might be listening, it's okay to obsess over certain things or focus on certain things and get detailed, because that's the beauty about homebrewing.
Yeah.
And this is the thing I've always said since working at More Beer, it's you can get as detailed as you want. Yeah. You don't have to be successful. You don't have to be hyper focused on the weirdest shit. You can literally take a spaghetti pot and a fucking the rich man's Dutch oven and and make beer that's drinkable. Sure, there are flaws, but it's still drinkable beer. But and if that's good for you, if you can't taste that, then you can just do that. You do not need to be hyper absorbed and stuff. But also, if you want to be, this hobby allows you to do that. It's one of the only hobbies I can really think of that allows you to go as in depth as you want to do it.
Yeah,
and still be successful at any level.
You can approach this hobby from so many directions. There's people who are like super into making equipment and systems and really into that aspect of, I'm going to mechanically engineer the shit out of the system And they love that stuff. There's people that are all about recipe design. There's people that are all about different aspects of this hobby. And that's one of the great things about it. You can kind of pick what you like to do and just do it and not worry about the other stuff so much.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in the going into homebrewing in the early 2000s, I got, you know, I saw that where people had started and they went from very simple to more complicated setups and the beer got better. Maybe the ingredients also got better. A lot of other things from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s to the aughts when I started brewing. And then, so I just felt like, well, I have to, you know, get more and try to do more. I need to get, you know, temperature control. Of course, that was a plus for me. I need to get, you know, this and that, something else. But the more you get, it doesn't necessarily make your beer better. Right. And now, I've gone to a point where it got a little less enjoyable to brew because I had to focus on all those things. And now I've come back around a little bit more to the, you know, I used to always make a yeast starter and my Erlenmeyer flask and my stir plate is a piece of crap and the little stir bar would fall off all the time. I'd be cursing at it. And I'd be just like not having fun. And then, you know, like Denny and Drew, the simple homebrewing guys, they come along and it's like, just get some proper. We have proper now. Get a bottle of water, mix it together, dump yeast in there, shake, start it and forget it and just go brew. Yeah. That made my life so much easier because I don't, that can't tell you the last time I used that stir plate. It was probably 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
Cause I just, it sits in my garage. I should just get rid of it. And something to be said for, it's not that great. I should just, it's actually like a hard drive magnet that somebody rigged up for me on a computer fan.
Man, I have a stir plate that I forget the dude's name. Back in the days, like the BN form, this is years ago, right? Super dude, nice guy. I forget his name. He put a stir plate together in the body of an old NES,
mm-hmm.
an old Nintendo. Wow. And I was like, dog, I need one of those. And he made one. And I have it. But I couldn't get the fucking stir bar to stay on it. And so I've never used it.
Yeah.
I have it somewhere. It's like, but it's cool. Anyway.
I have a stir plate that I still have. It's like 5 pounds. It's about the size of a laptop. It's not very, but just really heavy. And I used to work at this medical device company and we had like a internal garage sale, like 2005, to just get rid of old junk that was sitting around. And the stir plate, I looked it up once. It was like, $500-$600 new.
Jeez.
And we didn't need it anymore. And I bought it for $10 at like our internal company auction. And this thing, I haven't used it in years. I could probably go plug it in right this second and it would work.
Yeah, at that point, just give it to you.
pretty much.
You know what I mean?
So let's talk about Cooper's Kvike here.
Let's do that.
Mexican Kvike.
Running up against the time, and he also has a dry hop version too. So we've got to kind of condense everything into one because we.
And I'm gonna.
So
I have a couple of surprise. Yeah, I have like two surprise beers that I can really just for a second talk about because you guys don't have them. You know, Cooper's is really well attenuated, which you'd expect for a Kvike. Sure. Which you're fermenting at temperature, or higher temperature, and you get done fermenting in a day or two. Yeah, you expect that, but it doesn't have any of the fusels. And that's one of the great things about the Kvike yeast. You push a normal cerevisiae yeast up to 90 degrees, and it's going to taste like ass when it's done. It's all higher alcohols and fusels and nonsense. There's none of that here.
I didn't go all the way to 90 on this. I kind of went midway, like, you know, between its range of fermentation around 78.
So,
but it finished at 10-14. It's not super dry to me either, but it's fairly well attenuated. But 10-14, it finished and it did go quick, but it stopped, left a little bit of body in there. So I like that.
This is a 10-14 finish?
Yeah.
Wow.
Unless it went down a little more since, but I was going on a vacation and I just stopped it up and put it in my fridge because I had to, it was done bubbling for days and it maybe was still doing a little something. I don't know, but I put it in the fridge, checked the gravity when I got home from my vacation days later and it was 10-14.
Like, this goes to what Jamil always says, which is you can measure the final gravity all you want, but your perceived final gravity isn't always locked in with consistency with what the actual final gravity is. Is this comes across to me like a much, and I don't think anything's happened to it in the bottle. You know, it wasn't a gusher or anything weird. I think it's just, it tastes really well attenuated for being a 10-14.
Well, it's also on the lighter end for style. It's on the more like the 4%, 3.9% kind of territory. So it's very low, you know, it's a low alcohol beer to start with, but it's even light for the style. So I'm glad I didn't go to light lager and just get too dry because it would have been weird.
Yeah. I mean, this could use a little more carbonation, kind of like JP's. Again, we've talked at length about, I won't opine more about packaging at this point. It does have, I think I heard JP earlier in the show talk about something having like a Flintstones vitamin character. And there's a little bit of that kind of, you know, lactic is even too strong of a word. It's not a lactic acid, but there's kind of that slightly fruity, slightly citrus, slightly acidic that a Flintstones vitamin captures. I mean, imagine if you diluted a Flintstones vitamin down some. It's kind of the flavor that maybe,
I don't know if it, you know, sometimes the vitamin like flavor can come from nutrient. I did use a little, like a half tab of Servomyces in a 2.5 gallon batch.
Well,
I've been using that lately. Nah.
To clarify, it's not the chalky vitaminness. It's that fruity. It's the hard to pinpoint fruit punchy fruity thing that was more accentuated in the dry hop version.
That's with a hint of really acidity.
And that's why I was like, it's kind of tart, but it's not tart. Yeah, it's not tart, but you know, it's like, is it or is it not? I have no idea. Yeah. It's right in the line.
It's not tart like you've added lactic.
Right.
It's just that little hint of like maybe lactic light, maybe that is, which you get with a lot of Kvike yeast, which is not, you know, these are not sour beer yeast. But there is that hint of sour that they throw that in some styles you don't notice, but in something as light as a Mexican lager, you know, a 2A international pale lagerish beer, you know, any little thing like that is going to show up, I think, it's going to show up in some way.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, a testament to how good the rest of your process was that everything was clean enough that little hint of acidic showed up. Overall, I'd probably give this high 30s, maybe a little bit behind JP's, but not far.
I feel insulted by that. Your beer is so wildly different from mine. What are you trying to say? I would give it a third. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. It's not a Mexican lager. It doesn't meet the style guidelines, right? It's like fruity. It's kind of thin. It's not carbonated. Like, 25, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it shouldn't even be in the 30s because it doesn't taste like a Mexican lager.
Well, that's a good point.
Okay.
It's very clean, but
Cooper's sad right now.
I'm looking at my notes. I did add a bit of lactic acid to the water just to acidify it to a good pH for such a light grain bill. Maybe 5 milliliters in my 3 gallons or whatever water. Just very, very conservative, but I wanted to acidify it just slightly. And I only used a little spring water and some of our home water, but mostly distilled water. So that's why I think it doesn't have that. And I probably should have put some more, like some, you know, a little bit of gypsum or something in there to give it a little bit of an edge to accent the hop, because that is kind of what's missing from this. And I think that would come up to meet that gentle, you know, fruitiness, the maltiness that's in there, and give it a little bit more of a crispness, a bite.
Yeah.
That you kind of, not bite, sharp bite, but a little attack along with the carbonics. Like, okay.
Let's talk about your dry hop version. What did you dry hop with? Because that's what I was commenting on, that Flintstones vitamin kind of aroma.
Yeah. So I poured I think I poured a gallon of it off when I was transferring into a small little 1 gallon growler that I have, or 1.5, whatever it is. And I've had a couple of packs of hops I just gotten from, you know, NHC or whatever. I had a 1 ounce pack of Lemon Drop and a 1 ounce pack of Zomba sample size just for fun.
Oh, wow.
And just put it in these, because I kind of like the dry hopped lagers lately.
Yeah.
But the other thing that was going on with this beer, so I put it into a 300 micron like hop screen that went into the keg that it was living in. And I tasted it, you know, 5-6 days later. It wasn't very hoppy. So I just left it in there, didn't pull it out. Left it in there until I pretty much bottled it for you guys. So this is probably very overhopped, and somewhere in the middle was probably when it's better, because to me it's getting very grassy and kind of weird. But it was also, I was having trouble clarifying it. And I had a lot of trouble with the Kvike yeast clarifying my main batch. And it was insane to get this thing. And this thing I was worried about. And right now it's perfectly clear. So it's like, what was I worried about? Like, actually, I think clarified sitting in the bottles, because it was probably still the biofine that was in there. But I hit it with a pretty heavy dose of biofine, like, you know, almost, you know, probably like 3/4 of a tablespoon at first, just to see, okay, it's a little cloudy. Nothing. Then I thought, okay, I added another tablespoon, I thought, to that keg, but I might've added it to the dry hop keg, because that one's also really clear. And then it was the same when I looked at my main beer again the next time. So I added a full tablespoon. I thought maybe again, still not quite clear. So like 2 days before I bottled it for you guys, and maybe that's why the carbonation is also a little low, I kept opening it up, but I put in a whole nother tablespoon, which is enough. It should knock a 5-gallon batch down. And so it wasn't doing it, but when I bottled it, it was finally clear enough that I could say, okay, that's passable lager, but it's not crystal clear.
How do you use that? Because I have some of that too. And I think I just end up, I've done it two ways. One, I just add it to the fermenter and then leave it alone. And then the other way is I add it to the fermenter and then shake it up.
Right. So, I add it to, normally when I do it, ideally I add it to secondary before it's carbonated, and kind of gently swirl the keg or carboy that it's in to get that stuff kind of blended in, and then it settles out and pulls everything through. Okay. In this case, I did that, but then it got carbonated, and I was doing it on the carbonated beer, which I think doesn't work as well for some reason. I don't know why, but it's just, but I did also kind of gently swirl it and repurge the top, the headspace, and did what you're supposed to do. But
okay,
at least I didn't get a ton of oxidation in it. I'm happy about that from all that mucking around with my beer.
Yeah. Same with Char's too. I mean, really.
Yeah, a little more oxidized.
You know, this dry hop beer tastes a lot different than the base beer. Yes. And not in a bad way. It tastes really good. And I think that the dry hopping kind of, when there's a little light acid in that, the base beer, I mean, it's a very low level of acidity that I'm kind of trying to find to pick out. And the dry hopping just, that goes away. I mean, the dry hopping either covers it up or transforms that.
Accents
it. And it seems much more like it's supposed to be there with the dry hops than without.
Hmm. Cool. Awesome.
Again, it was probably like 14, 15 days of dry hop just sitting in there in the 1-gallon batch with 2 ounces in like a gallon. Jeez. It's just like, insane, insane amount of hops.
Yeah. I mean, they were both interesting beers. I don't really feel like they were Mexican lagers. Are you going to use that yeast again? What did you think about it? You pleased with it?
I thought it was a neat trick. And, you know, one of the best American light lagers I had was one that I tasted at a best of show in a competition that was made with Lutra yeast. So it was something that I wanted to try. I don't know that I know how to use it the best way yet. And there are some other things that I could tweak with this beer to make it better.
Are you going to?
I don't drink I don't know. I've actually got another half of the, but it's already milled and stuff. It's been milled for, a couple months or so since we're at the store. So it might be slack. Probably not good.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I have it. I could brew the rest of it and just do something different. Will I use the Lutra again? Sure. Why not? It's fine. Yeah. Maybe I'll make a hard seltzer someday just to be a dumbass.
You know what? That's a great idea with that.
Yeah, with the way that's throwing like a little bit of a little bit of fruit.
Yeah, a little citrus.
Could, yeah. All right, we're going to get out of here, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. I appreciate it. We're done, right? Like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I could drink my Star Sand beer or my Troop beer for you guys in like two seconds.
No, I don't want to do
because that. Because I had little Star Sand in those bottles. I had like about this much in one, and then I filled it up, and then I realized, oh, fuck. It's not a little bit of Star Sand. I had like a couple ounces of Star Sand in there. I'm not going to give that to you guys or drink it.
We'll let you do that on your own time. But if people want to send us beer, preferably not with a Star Sand in it, Use the star sand first, but you want to email, then dump it out. Make, you know, the foam, don't worry about the foam.
Yeah.
Email Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com, Brian with an I, and send us what you got. Let us know what you're looking to improve or change or get a, you know, better score in a competition, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we'll help you out with it. Beer, mead, cider, what have you.
Whatever you want, brothers.
Hard kombucha, whatever, we'll take it.
Soft kombucha, I don't give a shit. All right, everyone, until next time.